2 years ago, when the collapse of the Rana Plaza factory complex in Bangladesh caused the death of 1,129 sweatshop workers, the plight of garment workers hit the front page. It also opened the door in Southeast Asia for worker advocates and trade unions to mobilize. Top Western clothing labels had contracts with suppliers based in Rana Plaza. Firms such as JCPenney, Walmart, and Benetton had codes of conduct which proved no deterrent to dangerous sweatshop conditions. Up until the Rana Plaza collapse, Bangladesh had been a global center of low-cost garment production. Yet worker wages in Bangladesh remain among the lowest in the world. After the disaster, union activists pressured prominent European clothing labels to sign a global labor agreement known as the Accord to inspect factory conditions and to give unions direct access to garment workers. While the Accord was endorsed by the International Labor Organization, few American clothing brands participated. U.S. companies, led by Walmart and The Gap, created a rival alliance with only voluntary standards and no enforceable commitments. According to the American Prospect, over 2,000 factories in Bangladesh have been inspected since the Rana Plaza collapse, which uncovered over 54,000 building code violations. Yet 30 members, or about 10%, of the Bangladesh parliament own garment factories, which explains why the government has for so long tolerated abusive conditions and resisted reforms. A year ago, the Los Angeles City Council considered a proposal to renegotiate its agreements with financial services firms. A report by the advocacy campaign Fix LA found that the city paid twice as much in banking fees as for street services. At the same time, LA has been under intense pressure to cut city jobs and delay infrastructure spending. State and local governments rely on Wall Street firms to arrange bond financing, manage investments, and provide financial services. And these banks make billions of dollars every year. According to the news magazine In These Times, progressive activists are promoting the idea that state and local government should use collective bargaining strategies when dealing with Wall Street banks. For example, cities could establish a nonprofit or publicly funded agency to set up guidelines for municipal finance contracts, rejecting deals that do not meet these standards. Three big cities, New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles, combined do over $600 billion in business with Wall Street firms annually. This gives public officials leverage to demand lower interest rates and fairer terms, freeing up scarce funds for community services like parks, libraries, and schools. The state of Georgia is now a hotbed of prison reform, with expanded education programs for inmates to reduce prison recidivism. Under Georgia's Republican Governor Nathan Deal, the Peach State has halted prison expansion and reduced the prisoner population by 5,000 inmates. Instead of mass incarceration, the state is now focusing on diversion, treatment, and prisoner education. Professor of Criminal Justice Howard Zaire of Eastern Mennonite University observed that conservatives in southern states have embraced prison reform to cut costs. More than a few political leaders of the 1990s who pushed legislation to get tough on crime, such as former President Bill Clinton, now admit that many of these policies were misguided. But the question remains whether conservative states will spend prison savings on pet projects or whether they will continue to invest those funds on treatment and non-prison alternatives. While criminal justice reform has become a rare bipartisan issue in a polarized nation ahead of a major presidential election, that political solidarity could quickly crumble. A spike in violent crimes in a handful of cities, combined with fear-mongering political rhetoric from Republican presidential candidates targeting criminal Mexicans, could quickly undermine reform efforts. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Leslie Rudden.